Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
I want to build the wall. We need the wall. The Border Patrol, ICE, they all want the wall. We stop the drugs. We shore up the border. One of my first acts will be to get all of the drug lords, all of the bad ones. We have some bad, bad people in this country that have to go out. We're going to get them out. We're going to secure the border. And once the border is secured, at a later date, we'll make a determination as to the rest. But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
When Donald Trump began his campaign for president, he spoke initially about deporting all of the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. Now that he's president-elect, he says he will instead deport as quickly as possible the 2 to 3 million that he believes have criminal backgrounds. That's still a tall order, and one that Hispanics across the country and in central Wisconsin are worried about. They're worried about the possible breakup of families, the loss of breadwinners, and an America where immigrants are no longer welcomed in some quarters, but are instead treated with suspicion. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Today on Route 51, we're going to take an opportunity to look at the greater Hispanic community in our region, their contributions to our local economy, and the reaction to the president's immigration policy. Our guests today are Tony Gonzalez, Executive Director of EAG Interpreters of Wausau, and a co-chair of the Toward One Wausau organization, and Lisa Tamich-Kaiser, a bilingual attorney with Ruffey Law Offices in Wausau. A little later in the show, you'll also hear from Alejandro Vasquez, publisher of the Noticias Spanish-language newspaper of Abbotsford, and the general manager of El Primerito, a Spanish-language internet radio station that's also based in Abbotsford. And we'll hear from Alejandro's daughter, Yvonne Vasquez, who helps him with marketing at the newspaper and the radio station. Well, we'd also like to hear from you. If you've got a question or comment for our guests, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Thank you both for being with us today. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn, for having us.
Tony, how long have you been in the Wausau area?
I have been here a little over 3 years now, but around north central Wisconsin, a little over 18 years. I used to live up in Minocqua.
Now, you're the co-chair of an organization called Toward One Wausau. Tell us a little bit about that and what you're trying to accomplish.
Toward One Wausau is a project with WIPS, University of Wisconsin. Like I said, WIPS.
That's
Wisconsin.
The Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and which service. Is based at UW-Marathon County.
That is correct. And we, because of some incidents that occurred here in Wausau that kind of spurred some racial tensions, we are trying to get to the root of it and see how we can become a solution to integrate Wausau more with the diversity that is growing here and include people more in the things that are done at local government and all around this area.
The organization participated in a dialogue on diversity late in October here on the UW-Marathon County campus. How did that go?
Oh, that was a very good event. We had over 100 people coming, and we sat people in groups of six people with a table moderator and overall moderators, and had people just talk about their concerns, their views of diversity here in Wausau, what they felt about it, a true heartfelt feeling of what they have seen. And we had a diverse group, you know, people, and diversity is not just skin color, comes in age, ability, many different things that we can do. So it was very good to have people from all sorts of walks of life that have lived here in Wausau kind of give their feelings.
And do you have any other events lined up, anything that people might be interested in participating in?
Absolutely. Currently, we have a survey online at tiny.cc at Wisconsin. I'm going to correct this by the end of the program. I'll have this corrected. But it's a survey. We like the people go online. And
I think probably if you Google Toward One Wausau, it'll come up, or is it on the WIPS website?
Yes, it'll be on the WIPS website, and we will get it.
And as a matter of fact, we've got the survey right now at wpr.org/central. So that's where you can find it, wpr.org/central.
Yes, and we are using that survey to get everybody's feeling. It's an anonymous survey. You don't have to give your name, your race, or anything. But we need to get the input from people that live here so we can better address the concerns with different authorities. We are going out. We have a legislative group that is talking with the DA's office, with the police, with the judges. We have an educational group also that is talking with the schools to see how this racial divide has grown or what we need to do with it. So it's very important that people to see a better WASA, that people that want this town to be the wonderful town it could be, to give their input to see what we can do to make it better.
And Lisa, tell us about the work that you do as a bilingual attorney here in WASA.
I work in immigration, business, and estate planning. On the immigration side of the things, I do family-based petitions, which includes citizenship, adjustment of status, and then a whole kind of plethora of other petitions that are under that category.
Do you have a lot of interest in your work? Do you have a number of clients who are asking you to do that kind of work for them?
We do. A lot of people in WASA are very excited about doing immigration and getting immigration stuff done. We have people who come into our office, and they're very happy to get help on their petitions.
Do you represent people who are here with an undocumented status?
We do occasionally. There are a number of petitions that, depending on the situation, an undocumented person may have.
And you also do work with DACA, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Tell us what DACA is and why people would be approaching you with legal work for that.
So DACA is a shortened name for the first executive action that Obama mandated for immigrants. And the idea behind it is that childhood arrivals that are undocumented are less culpable because their parents brought them into the United States and it wasn't their decision, which is why this executive order went into effect.
Now, a number of these people came out of the shadows and said, I am here. I'm undocumented at the present time. What's going to happen to them now that they have been identified, now that they've come forward, thanks to this executive action? You've got a new president who conceivably could repeal that executive action and send them all back to Mexico.
Right, and that's the concern of a lot of immigrants that have DACA right now. However, we don't. There's no way for us to see the future. We don't have a crystal ball. We hope that that will not happen, and there's some policy reasons why that should not happen. It would basically be punishing people for trying to do the right thing.
Tony Gonzalez, you spent a good deal of your life in Latin America. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Oh, well, yes, thank you. I was born in New York, actually. My parents came here in 66. But between 66 and 71, I went back to Colombia. And from 71 through 80, I lived there. So most of my high school and forming years were in Colombia. So I carry the Colombian brand very deep inside of me. Mm-hmm. When I came here, I finished high school and I graduated and joined the Air Force. So at the same time, you know, I've lived in predominantly Anglo communities many times. So I identify very closely with both communities, the Anglo community, the Hispanic community.
Your mother still lives in Colombia?
No, no. My mother should be listening to the program right now.
Oh, good.
Of Managua.
Do you have relatives that are still in Colombia?
Yes. My sisters, I have a large, my cousins, a very large part of my family.
How did they react when they heard about our election and they found out that Donald Trump became president even though millions of people more voted for Hillary Clinton? Many people outside of the United States just can't fathom how our electoral college system works in this country.
That was the biggest question. You know, they say, how is that possible that she's got over 2 million votes in the popular vote and she didn't win? So trying to explain the electoral college is a very difficult thing. But, you know, we went ahead and did it, you know, my best ability, you know, saying that it's not the popular vote, but, you know, the way they divide districts and the way the votes are counted, then that determines who takes the electoral votes. And in the majority of the states, when a particular candidate not necessarily gets the popular vote, he can take all the electoral votes because they don't get proportionally distributed except for some states.
And Wisconsin, of course, played a big part in that. But you know, that's what I've heard. People who live overseas and who are used to democracies being run in the other country in their other countries can't fathom how our electoral college system works.
Absolutely. It's very confusing. And, you know, mostly for people in Latin America, it was very difficult to accept or to understand why the United States would elect somebody that bad spoke so much about Hispanics. So it was a surprise. They just don't see the beginning of it and how the relationships are going to be after so much insults were said. But I guess at this point there's an expectation that things will get toned down. I personally hope that the president and everybody under his administration condemn any of this talk that was said on the campaign that hopefully is not the feeling of most Americans. We know it's not the feeling of most Americans. It's just something that was done as a campaign prop, I think.
Well, let's look at what Donald Trump said about mass deportations after he got elected, not before, but after, to see how there is a different tone. He's now talking about 2 to 3 million people instead of the original 11 million. This is an interview segment that he did with Leslie Stahl of CBS News.
What we are going to do is get the people that are criminal and have criminal records, gang members, drug dealers. We have a lot of these people, probably 2 million. It could even be 3 million. We're getting them out of our country or we're going to incarcerate. But we're getting them out of our country. They're here illegally. After the border is secured and after everything gets normalized, we're going to make a determination on the people that you're talking about who are terrific people. They're terrific people. But we're going to make a determination at that. But before we make that determination, Leslie, it's very important. We want to secure our border.
Not 11 million, now 2 to 3 million, those with criminal backgrounds immediately. Are there 2 to 3 million criminals out of the 11 million who are undocumented? Lisa, do you have any idea?
I don't know if there's 2 to 3 million criminals. There may be not. And whether they were caught or not and have it on their record, whether it was 10 years ago or so, whether we keep track of that, whether we have the means or the financial ability to keep track of it, I don't know.
What would you have to do to deport 2 to 3 million people?
Oh, my. That takes a lot. I do a lot of work here in Marathon County as an interpreter, and we have run into the situation where a particular individual, undocumented, runs into the law, and suddenly he has an ICE hold, and they bring him down to Milwaukee or Chicago, then have to bring him up for his next court hearing, and something gets messed up along the line. They bring him back down to Chicago and then again back here. So, you know, this person floats between Marathon County in this instance.
And as an interpreter, you work with the criminal justice system. So you see this kind of thing close up.
I see this up and close, yes. So what happens is, you know, when this person gets transported back and forth how many times, this is taxpayer money. Because it has to be a secure transportation. So if this cost this particular individual $5,000, $6,000, $10,000, you go that times 11 million or 2 or 3 million, that's a lot of expense. And right now, really, immigration, you know, according to their laws, and Lisa can correct me right here, they're looking for more serious crimes or crimes of moral turpitude of the people that they want to are able to be deported. Not everybody for a traffic infraction or a misdemeanor case become deportable. So,
what about a DUI?
Technically, anyone who is here illegally can become deportable for doing a traffic violation. Whether the police choose to deport that person or not varies from state to state. In Wisconsin, for the most part, I haven't seen that.
The average immigration case, this is a statistic from Syracuse University, the average immigration case takes more than 2.5 years to complete. There are currently 521,676 cases pending in the immigration court system, and even that's even after the Obama administration scrambled to hire more judges to adjudicate hearings. So, Lisa, the system is already backed up.
Yes, the resources that is in the government justice department are limited, and the monies are limited, which creates the backlog.
Let's get a different take on Mr. Trump's deportation plans because, of course, a lot of this has to go through Congress. Let's listen to Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, a Wisconsin congressman, and also former Democratic presidential candidate Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Here's Paul Ryan.
I think we should put people's minds at ease. That is not what our focus is. That is not what we're focused on. We're focused on securing the border. We think that's first and foremost, before we get into any other immigration issue, we got to know who's coming and going in the country. We've got to secure the border. So we believe an enforcement bill, a border security enforcement bill, is really the first priority, and that's what we're focused on.
Okay, so it's not a top priority, mass deportation, but obviously President-elect Trump thinks it
no,
is.
No, securing the border is our
right.
Securing the border is our top priority.
Right.
What will you do in the United States Senate if they move forward on trying these mass deportations that Donald Trump said he supports on 60 Minutes?
We will resist that. All right. It is. This country faces very serious problems. Middle class is shrinking. Too many people living in poverty. Kids can't afford to go to college. Climate change is there. We have to deal with those problems. We don't have to divide this country up by having one group picking on people because they're Latinos or Muslims or African Americans. That's not what this country is going to be about. And I will do everything in my power to see that we come together and not let Mr. Trump or anyone else divide us up.
So Tony, Bernie Sanders says he's going to fight in the U.S. Senate against deportation, but the Democrats are in the minority. They may be able to filibuster.
Yes, I believe they will. And I also believe that a lot of the Republican elected officials are not as open to these mass deportations either. I actually had the opportunity to talk to Speaker Ryan a little over a year ago, and he was tell me actually about his family coming back from Ireland during the potato famine situation and how he is an immigrant too. And he expressed at that time, you know, that their main goal was securing the border. So I don't think, you know, we do have a country of checks and balances. When President-elect Trump was elected, we elected a president, not a dictator. So he can't just go on there and passing these laws that he believes that he's just going to pass real quick, you know, because there's a system that's going to check. And I believe that many of the Congress people, whether Democrat or Republican, are going to resist any kind of mass deportations because they know the impact in the economy and things that go with it.
I know around here, agriculturally speaking, our agriculture community relies on a lot of Hispanic workers to run the farms. And Central Wisconsin needs its workers. And I talked to a farmer once in Stratford that approached me and said, don't listen to the stuff you hear in the news about immigration. We love immigration. We are grateful for the immigrants that we have here.
Well, Trump won for a variety of reasons. Immigration wasn't all of it. He also won largely with white votes. But he did get a greater share of the Hispanic vote than many people predicted, especially given, Tony, that rhetoric on the campaign trail. Donald Trump got 29% of Hispanics. That's higher than the 27% that Mitt Romney got, and that Hispanic support may have helped put him over the top in some key states.
Absolutely true. And we actually tried to analyze how that happened. Very surprised in many instances. But then when you kind of break it down, you kind of realize what happens. A lot of the big number of this Hispanics are already third, fourth generation Hispanics. That immigration does not affect them that big. Either their parents are gone, they are here in a, you know, on a legal situation. So it doesn't really matter to them. The economy matters. Other issues matter. So it's understandable why a number of Hispanics did vote for him. The large numbers, you know, I can't explain all of it, but I know that, like I said, many of them, immigration was not their main issue.
Well, here's Javier Palomares. He's the president and CEO of the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, talking about what gave Donald Trump a higher percentage of the Hispanic vote than people expected.
You know, central to his campaign were immigration reform, jobs, and the economy. And clearly, it illustrates what we've been saying, for what our association has been saying all along, that while immigration reform is absolutely important. It's imperative. It is not the only issue that the Hispanic community worries about. Our community worries about the same things that all Americans worry about. We worry about jobs, the economy, national security. And clearly his message resonated with a portion of the Hispanic community that, you know, helped elect him as the 45th president of the United States.
Javier Palomares, the president and CEO of the United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And the statistics, Tony and Lisa, Latinos accounted for 11% of the voting public. That's up from 10% 4 years ago. But again, Donald Trump got 29% of those votes, making good on his prediction that he would top Romney, who got 27% of the Latino vote in 2012.
I think there's a few different aspects that go into that vote. One of them being is if you look at the economies of Central America, you would find a lot of their economies are suffering. And that's the reason a lot of immigrants came to the United States. So on the top of their mind is that we do not want to return to have a very poor economy. That's where we came from. We need to do everything we can to make the United States economy grow.
Do you know any Hispanics who voted for Donald Trump? And if so, what did they tell you? I'm opening this up to both of you.
Yes, I do know quite a few, and actually they fit some of the criteria that we're saying, that they've been here for quite a while, they've had their businesses quite a while. So again, immigration was not on top of their list, and more of the different issues. You know, many Hispanics, you know, are conservative, of conservative belief, you know, socially conservative. So it's not difficult for them to just ignore anything that has to do with immigration and just go with what the other issues that really do matter to them, that, you know, we can run into a number of them, you know, as far as right to life and many different things. So, yeah, you know, it's understandable. I mean, it was surprising, but understandable.
Many Hispanics are Catholic, so you would expect that anti-abortion attitudes, right to life, as you said, those Supreme Court nominations may have played a part in deciding how they would cast their ballots.
Absolutely. I think many Hispanics also understood that, you know, this election was even kind of beyond the candidates that we had that are, you know, so disliked. I mean, the numbers show that there has never been candidates so disliked as Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. But they understand that this election has much to do with the future of the Supreme Court and a whole generation.
We're talking about Central Wisconsin's Hispanic community and their reaction to Donald Trump's immigration policy. Our guests today are Tony Gonzalez, he's the co-chair of Toward One Wausau, and Lisa Tamich-Kaiser, a bilingual attorney with Ruffi Law Offices in Wausau. When we return, we will hear from Alejandro Vasquez, the publisher of Noticias, a Spanish-language newspaper that's based in Abbotsford. He also runs a Spanish-language internet radio station in the same community. We're going to take a short break. Here's Ricky Martin.
Support for WPR comes from WPS Health Insurance and its Medicare Companion Supplement Plan, offering local, personalized guidance on Medicare options and the freedom to choose a doctor with no restrictive provider network. WPS2017.com. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
Los Lobos taking us into our next segment of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking about Central Wisconsin's Hispanic community and their reaction to Donald Trump's immigration policy. Our guests today are Tony Gonzalez, co-chair of Toward One Wausau, and also Lisa Tamich Kaiser. She's a bilingual attorney with Ruffi Law Offices in Wausau. Now, if you'd like to join the conversation, if you've got opinions on deportations, on the Trump presidency, and how it may or may not affect our Hispanic immigrants, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Tony Gonzalez, you've had some statistics for us.
Well, I wanted to make, you know, based on the last segment that we have had about how many Hispanics did vote for President-elect Trump, you know, this places a lot more importance on this xenophobic feelings that are going around right here. You know, nobody, I don't have a label on my forehead saying I'm a legal American. I was born here. I was raised in Colombia and over here. But, you know, overall, when you look at me, I'm a Hispanic guy. So we have to be very careful. And these feelings that people have about you go back to your country that have been kind of prompted because of what Mr. Trump said, they need to go. And our legislators need to condemn it. But, you know, I have some numbers. You know, 40% of the workforce in the dairy farms in Wisconsin are immigrants. And, all you know, they are taking care of these farms. These farmers, I have gone all the way to Ladysmith, Glen Flora, Bruce, all around Lincoln County, and talked to many of these farmers. They need the workers. They want some reform. They want something done so these workers can be here and not be afraid because they're taking care of the farms and they cannot get other people to work. You know, if these undocumented immigrants were to leave and gone today, we would lose $2.6 billion in economic activity. We will lose 14,500 jobs, and the state will lose $1.2 billion in gross state product. And these are all Pew numbers, so anybody can double check. So they are an important contributor to the economy. In 2014, undocumented immigrants contributed $1 billion in state, local, and federal taxes. So anyone that says that they don't pay taxes needs to check twice. Like I said, they don't go to Walmart and there's not a special line saying if you're an undocumented immigrant, you don't pay taxes. No, you pay just like everybody else as well as you do at the gas pump.
I worked in St. Paul as a tax preparer for 1 year, actually. And I would say that we did have undocumented workers who came in to get tax services who did pay income taxes. This isn't true for 100% of undocumented workers. It's a case-by-case situation, but some do pay more than their fair share of taxes. Some pay into Social Security, and they'll never get out of it. And some don't. It depends.
About 40 miles west of Wausau on Highway 29 lies the community of Abbotsford. This is an old farming town, which is also a meatpacking center, thanks to Abbeyland Sausage. The plant and the surrounding dairy farms have attracted a relatively large Hispanic population, about 700 people out of a total population of about 2,300. And they have opened a number of Latino businesses in Abbotsford, including Noticias, a Spanish-language newspaper, and El Primerito, a Spanish-language internet radio station. They are both run by Alejandro Vasquez, who grew up in Mexico City, where he worked as a newspaper and magazine reporter. He is working now to become a U.S. citizen. We caught up with Alejandro Vasquez earlier this week as he was editing the newspaper and announcing on the radio.
Oiga, mis amigos, ya son las 9, casi con 30 minutitos, las 9 con 30 minutos. Recuerden que están escuchando El Primerito, transmitimos desde la bella ciudad de Abbotsford.
We are very, very excited because thanks to internet, people not only from Wisconsin, people from all the world cannot hear the radio station from this little city into the United States. In Abbotsford, you don't see people in the streets like don't have a house or don't have a food or don't have a clothes. In Abbotsford, the people live in peace. In Abbotsford, the people is very, very Republican and is very, very special. And you can see the children, how they live together. They are a happy children. They are a friends. And everybody live in peace. You can live in this city. You don't need to lock your car. You don't need to have a fence. You can see the kids play in the streets and the parks. And this is fantastic. Fantastic.
What portion of the people, the Hispanics, Latinos in Abbotsford, are full U.S. citizens? What portion are undocumented?
Very, very small portion. I don't know exactly. Not many. Some people, yes. Some families.
Are they worried about being deported because of Donald Trump and what he's promised to do?
Not much. Do you know why? Because this is not the first time when we have a new president. For years and years, we have a different presidents, Republicans and Democrats. And they promise many, many things. And they don't do it. Mr. Donald Trump, he's not a political man. He's a businessman. He is smart because now he's the president. Donald Trump is a human too. He have a family. The wife is immigrant too. She don't speak full English and don't care. He loves the wife. He loves the kids. He loves the family.
He has said, Alejandro, just a couple of weeks ago, after he was elected, so it wasn't a campaign promise, he said the first thing he's going to do when he takes over is deport 2 to 3 million people. Don't you take him at his word?
No. Let me tell you only one example. People who work in the farms, every day the people need a milking 3 times. If you don't milk only 1 time, you 1,000 cows, you have a serious and big problems.
So you're saying that the dairy industry depends on the Hispanics, and if the Hispanics were deported,
what can happen? Who's going to produce the milk? Who's going to clean your office? Who's going to work in Abilene? Who's going to work in the factory windows? Who's going to clean your house, man? Tell me who.
Alejandro, what is your hope for the future? What do you want to see in Abbotsford in the future? What's your hope for the Latinos, for the Hispanics who are living in America right now?
Strong families. Strong families. Peace, union, work, pay bills. And not only Abbotsford, in Wisconsin, in USA. United States is the number one in the world. Don't forget, never. USA is USA. Thank you very much.
Alejandro Vasquez, who runs the El Primerito internet radio station and Noticias, a Spanish-language newspaper. He runs them both out of his basement in Abbotsford. A little later in the program, we'll hear from Alejandro's daughter, Yvonne, who helps him with marketing. She was born in America, and that makes her a U.S. citizen. Alejandro is working to become one. Alejandro is very patriotic, Tony Gonzalez, even though he doesn't have his citizenship yet.
Absolutely. That is one thing that people need to understand. People that immigrate, that come here to the United States, though not always the correct way, they love this country. We share values that are very similar to the Christian principles that the United States was founded under. So they love this country. It's the opportunity. They're leaving countries that are many times marred by drug lords. That operate with the money that they get from consumption here in the United States. So we share some of that responsibility of these people trying to escape these situations. So, yeah, without a doubt, we all love the United States. We want to give the best to it, and everybody wants to be a part of it and not have to hide.
I was struck by the extent to which he was willing to give Donald Trump a chance as president, despite his pledge to deport undocumented immigrants.
What I heard in his voice was thankfulness. When he talks about his children playing in peace in the United States, that's because you cannot do that in other countries. Children cannot run outside without being afraid of having someone kidnap them and go past the road. So he is very thankful to be in the United States, and I think that is resonated with a lot of Hispanics.
And if I may say, Glenn, too, you know, yeah, it's very important. I also said it before, whether a person voted or didn't vote for Donald Trump, if we believe in the American way, the electoral process took its course. Donald Trump was elected. So now we all need to stand behind and go towards one America, towards working for everything. Now, obviously, we got to be aware of anything that happens that is anti-immigrant, and we're going to stand for it, but that doesn't mean that we are not going to support the president.
1-800-780-9742, if you'd like to join the conversation on Route 51. That's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Hans in Merrill. Hans, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. Thanks, Glenn, for having the program. Very important topic, and thanks to your guests. I really appreciated Alejandro's comments earlier. I think they were spot on, and I agree with a lot of what he was saying. A little background. My parents moved here, and had I been born a year earlier, I would be an immigrant myself. I've got an aunt and an uncle and two cousins and a sister who are foreign-born. So I guess my point there is I know other folks who have come from other countries. So immigrants are all around us, and it's a fact of life. And I think that whether these immigrants come from Mexico, Colombia, or Switzerland, I think everybody brings something to the party. And so one of the things that's really troubling me right now is that friends of mine, employees of mine, and I should mention I have a dairy farm, and I've had employees, Latino employees and Anglo employees for well over 10 years. And one of the concerns and the stories that I'm hearing from those folks are, they're not so much scared of deportation, but just being able to go out and about. Because of the rhetoric that we've heard on the campaign trail and that we're still hearing, it's sort of given people license to, act disrespectfully and, towards our neighbors and our friends. These aren't just, stories that we hear on the news. These are real issues that happen to our neighbors and to our friends when they're being verbally or physically disrespected at schools and stores and bars and restaurants, that's real and that's happening right now.
Hans, thanks so much for your comments. And the Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks hate crimes in America, has reported, I think, well in excess of 800 documented attacks, some of them more serious than others, on minority groups since the November 8th election. Tony Gonzalez, have you heard of anything like that in central Wisconsin? And Hans, thanks so much for your phone call.
Thank you.
We have. We heard about a situation that came in Lawrence University, I believe that's, or in Appleton, where three individuals, I don't know who they were dressed in full KKK gear and caused a lot of fear among a lot of minority students there. And in one of the schools here, we also heard a report of kids wearing a Trump shirt and hats and making very disparaging comments to Hispanic and Hmong kids. So we have heard of these instances, and it's just pure ignorance, to go and talk badly about people that you don't even know. So, yes, it has been reported. We have heard of instances. But also we are trying to work with the schools also to make sure that these situations are clearly addressed by the administration and not accepted in any manner.
And I did ask Alejandro Vasquez if he had seen or heard of any hate crimes, any attacks on Hispanics and immigrants in the Abbotsford area. He said he hasn't seen it there yet.
I haven't heard of any personally myself, which hopefully is a sign that it is few and far between. I know that central Wisconsin is known for being a very friendly, great place to live, and I hope that still holds true.
Now, Keith Ulig, who's a reporter for the Wausau Daily Herald, grew up in Abbotsford. He did a profile of the city in which he noted that the new Hispanic entrepreneurs have been responsible for an economic revival in the town. Many abandoned buildings now have thriving new Latino-owned businesses. And, Tony, you were saying that this is something that Hispanics are doing all across this state and all across America.
I'm glad you brought that up because I got a statistic here that Hispanics – we are entrepreneurs, and last year businesses owned by Latinos in the state of Wisconsin generated $600 million and employ 11,000 people in the state. So it is a big segment of people that hire and people that create jobs here of Hispanic origin. So it's a huge impact on the economy and people that, like I said, again, love this country and want to contribute.
We're talking about Central Wisconsin's Hispanic community, their reaction to Donald Trump's immigration policy. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests today are Tony Gonzalez, co-chair of Toward One Wausau, and Lisa Tamich-Kaiser. She's a bilingual attorney with Ruffi Law Offices, also in Wausau. When we return, we will hear from Yvonne Vasquez. Now, she is the daughter of Alejandro, the publisher of Noticias, that newspaper that's based in Abbotsford. We're going to take a short break right now. Here's Freddie Fender.
Now the lonely mission bells are softly ringing. If you listen with your heart, you'll hear them singing. Vaya con Dios, my darling, vaya con Dios, my love.
Support for WPR comes from Oakwood Village Rehabilitation Services at University Woods on Madison's west side and Prairie Ridge on the east side. Both campuses support patients with dedicated and talented staff focused on achieving a complete recovery. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600. Gloria
Estevan taking us into our next segment of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We are talking about Central Wisconsin's Hispanic community and their reaction to Donald Trump's immigration policy. Our guests today are Tony Gonzalez, co-chair of Toward One Wausau, and Lisa Tamich-Kaiser, a bilingual attorney with Ruffi Law Offices, also in Wausau. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Unauthorized immigrants in the United States paid $11.8 billion in state and local taxes in 2012, including $7.1 billion in sales taxes, $1.1 billion in personal income taxes, and $3.6 billion in property taxes. And that is according to data from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, it's a huge misconception oftentimes when they say that immigrants do not pay taxes. You know, they do. When they go work in different places, they have either a social security number or, you know, the origin of it. I can't check on it because I can't take somebody's social security and say, this is good. I got to take it at face value. If I could, then there'd be a lot of fraud, actually. So I'm not able to do that. Obviously, right now they're talking about E-Verify. I don't know how that system works, but we'll see how it goes. But, yes, they do pay. I've gone to a lot of the farmers, and they show me their records, and they show how FICA and Social Security is taken out. And they also tell me that they'll receive a letter months later saying, well, this number doesn't match, and he will send back the application that was given by the person, and then he doesn't hear from the IRS anymore. And this money is always being deducted. I don't know where it's sitting, but it is money that is coming.
Well, I think
in.
It's sitting in the U.S. Treasury.
Yes.
And I would say that holds true for the most part, Tony. Most people do pay income taxes. I do know some people, some undocumented immigrants, that do not pay income taxes. So I think that should be addressed as well. I know that most immigrants, whether undocumented or documented, do pay their fair share of taxes to Uncle Sam. However, there is a population that doesn't, and that's where the controversy comes in.
Right. And I'm sorry. And that is true. And one of the reasons that most of the very honest workers that do file their taxes, they love this concept of getting a return at the end of the year, you know, because that never happens in their country.
In the last segment, we heard from Alejandro Vasquez, the publisher of Noticias, a Spanish-language newspaper in Abbotsford. I also had a chance to talk to his daughter, Yvonne Vasquez, who helps him with marketing. She's a U.S. citizen from birth. She was born in Elgin, Illinois, even as her father is still working to attain his citizenship. And as someone who works in the Spanish-language media, she thinks the media was biased against Donald Trump and biased toward Hillary Clinton before the election.
In our Latino community, I can tell you, sometimes when I'm watching like the Hispanic news, they were only talking about the good things about Hillary and the bad things about Trump, and everybody should go and vote for Hillary and not for Trump because of this. So they thought that Hillary was going to win. And I think all the media did that. They were like, oh, Trump, no, he's never going to get there.
Well, the polls showed Hillary on top.
Yeah, and now look at it. Donald Trump is the president and Hillary's not. Now that he's been elected to be the president, now he's saying, I'm going to deport 2 to 3 million people, but I'm going to deport the criminal ones. I don't think we want criminals in our communities. I think if he's saying that, maybe he's going to make our country better. Why should we keep criminal people here in the U.S.?
There are 11 million Hispanics living in the United States. Are you saying that 2 to 3 million of them are criminals?
No, I think a lot of them have criminal backgrounds, yes. I think the only sad part about it, you know, like, we have a lot of people that maybe did something when they were younger and that they have a criminal background now. And I think everyone deserves, you know, like a second chance in their lives, and maybe they're trying to change now. Maybe now that they have families, maybe now that they have grown up, they see things a little bit different. And I think that is like the sad part.
But he said he would immediately deport 2 to 3 million people, and he just said that a week ago. Are you saying that's not going to cause problems with the Hispanic community if he follows through on his promise?
No, but I didn't say that that's not going to cause problems. Of course, it doesn't matter if it's only one person. Of course, that is going to cause problems. Can you imagine if that one person, if he's the support of his or her family, of course it's going to cause problems. We have to wait to see what he's really going to do. It doesn't matter if he deports or if he doesn't. If he deport people, there is going to be a lot of sad, mad people, families, industries, and all those things. And if he doesn't, it's going to be the same thing.
That's Yvonne Vasquez, who works with her father, Alejandro, at the Spanish-language newspaper Noticias in Abbotsford. Lisa, she says if Donald Trump deports the criminals out of the undocumented population, maybe it will be good for the country.
I think that might be true as well. If you deport people who are committing crimes, I mean, it depends. To me, there's a difference between the crime. There's a difference between a DUI that happened 10 years ago, and there's a difference between someone having sexual assault 1 year ago. If we deport those people that do commit those large crimes, I think that would be very good for our country.
I'm going to try to squeeze in at least one more phone call. Let's go to Pete in Marshfield. Pete, we're running short on time. If you could make your comments quick.
Okay, really quickly, first of all, thank you for taking my call. And the Hispanic egg workers I know are very productive and good people. Whether they're documented or not, I don't know. But my father is an immigrant from the Netherlands, and just to comment on the ignorance, it was bad. And in those days when you were picked on in school or hit in school, if it was off school grounds, the school or the police were never involved. That mistreatment and ignorance has always been around. And like I said, my dad is Dutch. He was from the Netherlands, and that's 50 years ago or more. But, you know, I think Americans want the laws defined. We can blame the politicians, both parties. What are the laws, and would you please define them and enforce them?
All right. Pete, we're running out of time. Thanks so much for the phone call. And let's move on to Larry, who's driving through Wisconsin. Larry, you've got about 15 seconds for your question.
Well, I work with a company out of St. Paul, Minnesota. We have several hundred Hispanic workers in our production lines. In the fruit and produce business. And I just was wondering what level of clemency your guests were thinking are deserved of these people who have not only broken our laws once by coming here without documentation, and subsequently after that committed crimes, misdemeanors on up. They are all crimes. They've already gotten a second chance coming here in the first place. How many third, fourth, and fifth chances do they believe people want.
All right, Larry, we've got it. Tony, you've got about 10 seconds for a response here. I'm sorry.
Well, yes, I understand that a lot of them by coming here committed a crime, but we got to understand why that crime occurred, first of all. And second of all, we live in a country that the police system is in place, so people get a chance. And we're not saying that everybody needs to stay. I think every Hispanic agrees that any big criminal has, you know, we want to get rid of them because every time they commit a crime, we all look bad. But the vast majority are good people that are contributing.
Lisa, you've got the final word.
I would say that when it comes to committing crimes, our government system already has a place in check where they use discretion and they take into account if there's a family situation or not.
Thank you so much, both of you, for being with us today. We want to thank today's guest, Tony Gonzalez, Executive Director of EAG Interpreters and Co-Chair of Toward One Wausau, and Lisa Tamich-Kaiser, an attorney with Ruffi Law Offices of Wausau. Thanks also to Alejandro and Yvonne Vasquez. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss, production assistant, Eli Frieders. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Flaco Jimenez and Rye Cooter, Carlos Santana, Ricky Martin, Los Lobos, Freddie Fender, Gloria Estevan, and Raul Malo and the Mavericks. Next week on Route 51, it's a special live music program with Stevens Point's very own Horseshoes and Hand Grenades. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.